So hi everyone, welcome to the 7 Steps to Awakening. Oh, and everything is now starting. So tell you what, let's play a song, because I like to play a song. This is Singing in the Rain, since I've been having a rainstorm here with computer troubles. Let's play Singing in the Rain.
I'm singing in the rain, just singing in the rain. What a glorious feeling, I'm happy again. I'm laughing at clouds so dark up above. The sun's in my heart and I'm ready for love. Let the stormy clouds chase everyone from the place. Come on with the rain, I've a smile on my face. I walk down the lane with a happy refrain and singing, just singing in the rain. Let the stormy clouds chase everyone from the place. Come on with the rain, I have a smile on my face. I'll walk down the lane with a happy refrain and singing, just singing in the rain.
Perfect. Beautiful, happy song. Now I'm just going to quit iTunes if I can, so that we don't have too many things open at the same time. No, that was called, I already closed it, but it wasn't Andy Williams. It was called Graham something. It was a band. And I already closed it, so I've lost that now. Sounded like Andy Williams, kind of, though, didn't it, now that you mention it? Unless he was singing with this band that day, I don't know. But it didn't mention him at all. All right, so as I pointed out, the quote that we are beginning with today is quote 799. This is a step for Nisargadatta Maharaj quote, and this is the quote. The idea of enlightenment is of utmost importance. Just to know that there is such a possibility changes one's entire outlook. Again, the idea of enlightenment is of utmost importance. The idea, you know, it's not very often that that Nisargadatta points to ideas, right, and says this idea is important, but that's what's being done here. The idea of enlightenment is of utmost importance. Just to know that there is such a possibility changes one's entire outlook. To me, the interesting thing about that quote is that I don't know that we actually know what enlightenment is, in spite of the fact that, you know, some teachers have gone to great care to try and describe it to us. It seems to me that when a particular teacher tries to describe that which is beyond the mind, that which is beyond, you know, subject-object consciousness, the only thing I really get out of that description is that I can't possibly understand. And that the only way for me to really know what they're trying to describe is to get there myself. That seems to be what I get out of it. I think that for some people, you know, the one thing that they're able to hear in the description of enlightenment is no suffering, where they may hear terms like bliss. And certainly if they have a life where they experience suffering of one form or another, then the idea of no suffering or the idea of bliss is very, very attractive. In my case, and I think I've shared this before, I don't really experience suffering. My pants are a little tight right now because I had too much to eat, but I don't consider that suffering. I experience pain. I experience physical pain as the body is aging, you know, especially at night when I lay down to sleep, I experience physical pain. Sometimes, you know, it keeps me awake even, but for me that is not suffering. I don't experience suffering. And so it's interesting if I look at what attracts me to enlightenment, if we use that word, is simply wanting to know. Simply wanting to know the truth. And I've told this story before, but I will tell it again. And funny thing is, it's only partially true. I think maybe all stories are only partially true. Because I'm about to say, it is partially true, I'm about to say that what motivated me on the spiritual path was Peace Pilgrim. But of course, I would not have read Peace Pilgrim if there wasn't already something motivating me. Right? I mean, what led me to read Peace Pilgrim? So one thing, whenever I talk about the beginning of this spiritual path for me, it always seems to have previous beginnings as well. In fact, I was visiting my mom about a year ago, and she has this chest where she's kept things like my grade cards and stuff. You know, maybe your mom has a chest too. And we were going through the chest, and she was showing things, in particularly to Jasmine. And one thing she pulled out was a story that I wrote probably when I was around 19 years old. So not a little kid, but, you know, way before I perceived myself as even thinking about a spiritual path. And I read that story, and it was totally spiritually focused, the entire story. My mom said, "See, you know, you've always been this way." So I don't really know where the beginning is. You know, that's why I say the story I'm about to tell you is only partially true. But when I was probably 36, you know, give or take a year, I was introduced to Peace Pilgrim's book, Peace Pilgrim, Her Life and Works in Her Own Words. And when I read that book, I could see that she knew something that I didn't know. She called it love, or at least that's my memory of what she called it. She called it love. But I knew that love, what she was calling love, was not the emotional love that I knew, you know, where you feel these positive emotions for another person, you know, and not necessarily mixed with attraction. If it's like in a couple type of relationship, it may be mixed with attraction. But if it's for your cousin or your mom, or, you know, it's not mixed with that same kind of attraction, but it's still a positive feeling, a positive emotional feeling. And that's what I thought of as love, but I knew that she wasn't talking about that. I knew that she was talking about something else. And I wanted to know what it was. I just wanted to know. What was this thing she knew that I didn't know? And that was a big motivator for me. So that's what this quote kind of reminds me of if I look back at my personal experience when it says, the idea of enlightenment is of utmost importance. Just to know that there is such a possibility changes one's entire outlook. And, you know, again, I don't even know if I would have used the word enlightenment. I might have. But just the fact that she, you know, knew something that I did not know, which I could call enlightenment, just knowing that that possibility existed, this knowing something more than what we see every day and experience every day, that was highly motivating for me. And again, we're looking at chapter 4 or step 4 in the 7 steps to awakenings, which means we're really looking at quotes that are intended to motivate our desire for liberation. And so the idea of enlightenment itself, being aware of those who have experienced what's beyond mind, beyond subject-object consciousness, and listening to their descriptions of it, that alone can be very motivating. Now, what I'm going to do now is go to my journal and see what I wrote when I contemplated quote 799 for the first time, which was October 3rd, 2015. So this is 799A, which means I contemplated it more than once, and so I have more than one thing written in the journal. When the desire for truth occurs, it is not an accident. It is a gift. It is a calling. It is as if the mysterious force of the universe has exhaled itself into different forms for the sake of tasting experience. And now it is inhaling again, calling itself back to itself for the sake of resting in remembrance. So that's, to me, that's an interesting contemplation of quote 799. The idea of enlightenment is of utmost importance. Just to know that there is such a possibility changes one's entire outlook. And then, you know, somehow, I'm not sure how, when contemplating this quote, I saw this image, you know, obviously a symbolic image, but I saw this image of like, I'll call it God. For lack of not having a better word, I saw this image. I didn't see a white bearded God or anything. It was more like a formless universe. And even the word universe isn't correct. But I saw God exhale into the universe, into the world, into the forms that we are. And then I saw that this exhale had ended. And you know, at the end of it, the exhale, there's the need to inhale again. And so it's very, very natural for the inhale to begin again. And then for the different forms that had gone out in the exhale to begin waking up to the return. And for some reason, I can't say why today, that's the image that came to me as I contemplated this quote. Again, the journal entry 799A says, when the desire for truth occurs, it is not an accident. It is a gift. It is a calling. It is as if the mysterious force of the universe has exhaled itself into different forms for the sake of tasting experience. And now it is inhaling again, calling itself back to itself for the sake of resting in remembrance. And I'm going to go on to 799B and see where else I went with this. Here's 799B. When you feel the call of the inhale, you can change your way of being. On the exhale, you are focused outward, and rightly so, because gaining experience was your God-given purpose. It was the purpose of the exhale. Conversely, when the call of the inhale occurs, you can turn your attention inward. So again, I'm not quite sure what in this quote led me to see this symbolic image. But I think that one thing I want to comment on that's in this particular journal entry is that when we feel the call to awaken, the call to enlightenment, the call to end the ego, it says you can turn your attention inward. In other words, that is what we are supposed to be doing. We feel the call because that is what we are supposed to be doing now. We can let go of the outward focus that preceded the call, and we can now turn our attention inward. We have permission, we have permission to do that. We can let go of the outward focus and turn our attention inward. And you know, that might not be a minor point. It might be helpful to some of us to really see it as we have permission to turn our attention inward, because we are in a society where outward achievement appears important, right? That's where the focus is. You're supposed to, you know, maybe make money, be successful in some way, you know, be good at something. You're supposed to be good at something, right? I don't think any of us were taught that you don't have to be good at anything. Doesn't matter whether it's a hobby or whether it's your job, but you should be good at something. It's very outward focused. And so what can happen when we start to feel the call and we start to want to really take genuine time to go inward is there can be this feeling that somehow I'm not doing what I'm supposed to be doing. Like, I shouldn't be spending this time inward. I should be cleaning the house, or I should be spending my time with family, or I should be working to be successful at my job. You know, there's something that I should be doing, and this inward time that I'm feeling a call to take is taking me away from where I should be. You know, that's the ego thought system. That's the outward focused thought system. And it's not true. At least that's what this journal entry says. If we're feeling the call to go inward, we have permission. That's God's inhale. We are being inhaled now, and we don't need to fight the inhale by trying to stay outward focused because of some idea that we're supposed to be outward focused in order to get something done or be with somebody. I know that I had this idea for a long time. A long time. You know, like I have this work, this job, president, minister of Awakening Together. And there was this idea that I had to accomplish all of these tasks for Awakening Together. I have family. And there was this idea that I had to spend, you know, a certain amount of quality time with my family. And I think I talked a bit about this last week as well. And then what happened is in the fall of this year, I became more motivated than ever before for solitude. And even though the job of president of Awakening Together is still there, I just told people, look, I'm going to be taking solitude. I even gave Ken and Jacqueline a schedule for the whole next year. Here's when I'm going to be in solitude. You know, suddenly the motivation, I guess, was strong enough. The pull of the inhale was strong enough that the idea that I should be, you know, fully outward focused on the job, it just It didn't have the same weight that it did before. And the same thing with my family. I just told my family, Ron and Jasmine and other people, you know, like Danielle and my mom, you know, that on these days I'm going to be in solitude. I won't be texting. I won't be, you know, if Ron's here, I won't be coming upstairs to be with you. I won't be on the phone, on the internet. You know what they all said? Okay. So the idea that somehow I couldn't do that, that I had to be outward focused and available for them, was not true. But it seemed true until the inhale was strong enough, until the desire was strong enough that I just had to take this time of solitude, and I was no longer allowing the outward focus, the apparent responsibilities, to be an excuse. So we do have permission, if we're being called, if we're being inhaled, we have permission to go with that inhale. So 799B, when you feel the call of the inhale, you can change your way of being. I'll say that again. When you feel the call of the inhale, you can change your way of being. On the exhale, you were focused outward, and rightly so, because gaining experience was your God-given purpose. It was the purpose of the exhale. Conversely, when the call of the inhale occurs, you can turn your attention inward. So again, we have permission. The idea that we're still supposed to be outward focused is just a lingering old idea. Going on to 799C. Do not try to fight the call of the inhale. You cannot fully resist the nature of God. To attempt to do so is a useless waste of energy and needless delay. So if you look at this symbol, the symbol of, you know, God exhaling, and we all come into form and are outward focused and have all kinds of experiences, and then God begins to inhale, and now we're being pulled back in the opposite direction, back into the heart of God again. Our attention is focused in the opposite direction, and there's a strong, you know, almost like a wind, inhale, right? Can you imagine? We're still trying to be outward focused. We're trying to fight it. We're trying to swim against it. All we're going to do is wear ourselves out. And, you know, I feel that, even though this is a symbol. If I don't take the time that I feel called to take to go inward, If I turn my attention outward when I'm supposed to be inward, if I'm supposed to be, I mean, I feel the call. Like right now, I spend a certain amount of time every morning in solitude. Of course, I spend now certain days in solitude too, but every morning I spend a certain amount of time in solitude. And let's say, for example, that I'm contemplating something that reminds me of something that I could put in the Awakening Together tip for the day because they're related. If I try to stop my contemplation time and go to writing the tip, which is really a part of my work day, I'll start to feel a little, stress isn't exactly the right word. It's more like a tension, I guess, a little tension. I'll start to feel a little tension, I'll call it, that tells me I'm doing the wrong thing. I wasn't supposed to turn my attention to writing a tip for others. I was supposed to stay in contemplation. And so as soon as I start to feel that tension, I know that I tried to go in a direction I wasn't supposed to go. And so I can stop and return to my contemplation. And then that just feels like, this is where I'm supposed to be. Same thing with when I go into meditation. when it's time to go into meditation, it's like, And even when I come out of meditation, when it's time to come out, it feels good too. As long as I'm following what I'm supposed to do, I guess what I'm guided to do in the moment, within the flow, it always has that right feeling to it. But as soon as I try to step out and do something else that I think I should do, you know, there's this tension. So that's kind of like fighting the exhale, isn't it? If I'm being inhaled, there's a flow in that inhale. And if I stay in the flow of that inhale, it's like the song I sang you guys before I could get the recorder going. I didn't see the connection. I remember when I couldn't get the recorder going, I couldn't get iTunes going, nothing was working, so I said, okay, I'll sing. And I sang, row, row, row your boat gently down the stream, right? You're rowing your boat gently down the stream with the flow. In this case, you know, rowing into the inhale of God. But if you start trying to fight that and start trying to row the opposite direction, against the stream, you're going to wear yourself out. You're going to feel tension. So this journal entry says, do not try to fight the call of the inhale. You cannot fully resist the nature of God, right? You're not going to row that boat back upstream. It's too strong. To attempt to do so is a useless waste of energy and needless delay. Unnecessary tension, and really that tension is a type of suffering, unnecessary suffering. Just go with it. Just surrender. If God wants you to spend hours a day in contemplation and meditation, just do it. If God wants you to spend an hour a day, if that's where you're at, then just do that. It doesn't have to be hours if that's not the current level of your inhale. But don't fight it. Don't go against it. When you feel the tension, because you stepped out of that flow, just step right back into that flow. So again, the quote, which I'm not quite sure how I got to the image. Maybe the image just appeared. But the quote was, the idea of enlightenment is of utmost importance. Just to know that there is such a possibility changes one's entire outlook. And now that I look at this, I suppose the image came from these last few words, changes one's entire outlook, right? An exhale would be one outlook, outward focused, and an inhale would be another outlook, inward focused, right? So I suppose it was somehow in these last few words that whole symbol came. I'm going to move on to the next quote, which is quote number 800. If you are truly earnest and honest, the attainment of reality will be yours. One thing I love about Nisargadatta Maharaj is in different ways he says this over and over and over and over again, and I just love it. You know, he says if you are earnest, if you are sincere, in this case, if you are honest, right? If you're just earnest, sincere, honest, and you just keep trying, if you just really want it and you don't want anything else, then the attainment of reality will be yours. So, of course, that just leaves us with the question, do I want it? Which I think might have been the tip today, right? It's hard for me to remember because, again, I'm about a week ahead of most of the Gentle Healing Group. It was either the tip today or the tip yesterday. You know, we have a decision to make. Do we want this? I think it was your tip today. I do read your tips. The same tip you read, I read it. When I first get up in the morning, I read that tip. But then I go into my own contemplation, and that ends with me going back and writing a tip, and then I'm more focused on the tip I wrote rather than the tip that was posted. So then I have trouble remembering which tip you're on. But I think today you guys are on that tip. That we have a decision to make. Do we want this? Do we want this? And that's really what Nisargadatta is saying here. If you are truly earnest and honest. That's another thing, is we can't say, yeah, I want it. Okay, Jacqueline says, yeah, that is your tip today. We can't say, yeah, I want it, and then not give any attention to it. Right? Not give, you know, in a way, the spiritual path has always reminded me of dieting. Because, let's say I want to lose 10 pounds. I may really feel like I want to lose 10 pounds. I mean, you know, most people who think they want to lose 10 pounds really do think they want to lose 10 pounds or 20 pounds or 30 pounds or whatever it is. I may feel like, oh my gosh, I just want to lose this weight. But if I keep eating lots and lots of cake every day, do I want it enough? Which do I want more, the cake or to lose the weight, right? Because eating lots and lots of cake every day is not helping with that goal. In fact, I'm probably gaining weight. So in a way, the spiritual path is like dieting. I can't just say, oh, I want it so bad, and then keep feasting on the ego and outward focus. If I really, really want it, then just like if I'm dieting, I have to put down the cake. Maybe even exercise. If I really, really want it, awakening, then I need to take that inward focused time. And I also need to put down the ego. By put down the ego, I mean when I'm not in that inward focused time, because I don't think any of us are sitting in inward focused time 12 hours a day. We all have interaction in the world in some way with our families, with our work, whatever. When our attention is outward, but even when it's outward, it still has to remain contemplative attention, which means when I see the ego arising in me, I just watch it and I don't act from it. I don't speak from it. I have to put down the cake and I can't keep feasting on the ego. So really the spiritual path is a lot like dieting. To say I want to lose weight and to keep eating cake, that's not being honest with myself. What I really want is cake, right? So to say that I want awakening and yet not to take that quiet inward time each day and to just keep believing all of the ego thoughts and acting and speaking based on the ego all day long, that's not really wanting awakening. It's not being honest with ourselves. So if you are truly earnest and honest, right? Just like, you know, you really could lose weight if, and of course, you know, I mean, you know, it could be French fries, it could be potato chips. I don't know what your thing is. I'm just using cake as an example. But you really could lose weight if you put the cake down, quit eating the cake. Just like you really could lose weight if you quit eating the cake. He's saying you really can attain reality if you're earnest and honest. And put your efforts in that direction. So let's look at the journal entry. I have 800A here. Earnestness is not the only focus for the practitioner. Honesty is also important. And last week, if I remember correctly, I know we did this. What I think is that it was last week. It could have been 2 weeks ago, but I think it was last week. We looked up the definition of earnest. Earnest is showing sincere and intense conviction. We looked at that more slowly last week. Showing sincere and intense conviction. Right, just think about dieting, what that would mean. Showing sincere and intense conviction. I want to lose 10 pounds. And then think about awakening. Showing sincere and intense conviction. I want to awaken. Right? Okay, so 800A in the journal says, earnestness, showing sincere and intense conviction, is not the only focus for the practitioner. Honesty is also important, right? In fact, one who is always thinking of spirituality but not being honest with oneself is not truly earnest. And that's because sincere, the definition of sincere that we saw last week means that you're not deceiving yourself. And so earnest includes sincerity, and sincerity includes honesty. So if you're not honest, you're not actually earnest. It's just a trick that you're playing on yourself. So in fact, one who is always thinking of spirituality but not being honest with oneself is not truly earnest. That one is deluded and playing with an unreal spiritual self-image. I'll tell you guys a story. When I first moved to Pueblo for the first, I don't know, probably 3 years or so that I was here, we had guests all of the time. I mean, literally, it was like a hotel here. A person would check out of the guest room one day and somebody else would check in the next day. And sometimes we had two and three people here, you know. We had a lot. In fact, Jasmine was just here for the last month and she was commenting on how many people used to always be in our house, you know, just all of the time. She was saying she thinks that prepared her to live with roommates in college, right? Having so many people around all the time. And, you know, Jasmine, for the most part, liked everyone. But there were certain people that she just didn't like. And there were certain characteristics that these people had in common. All they could talk about were spiritual things. And yet, at the same time, the living had not caught up with the talking. You know, they acted from ego and talked about spirituality. And they couldn't sit down and just have a normal conversation is. You know, they couldn't just sit and talk to Jasmine, for example, on the level that, you know, Jasmine was probably 14, 15 at the time, on the level that you might talk to a 14 and 15-year-old. You know, how are things going in school? You know, are there any cute boys? You know, just whatever. You know, it was all this spiritual talk, only spiritual talk, and then clearly still just living from the ego. And in fact, one thing that people used to always say around here was, I'm guided to ... And, you know, it was clear to everyone that, you know, they were just following their own thinking and using the words, I'm guided to. I remember even Danielle used to start rolling her eyes. She's like, I'm so sick of everybody's guidance, because, you know, there was just no truth to it. In other words, Jasmine and Danielle could smell the spiritual ego a mile away. In fact, I was watching this cute little video today that came on. It was on the news. I was watching the news on the internet, not on the television. And this little video came on following the news story that I was watching. And it was a little girl talking about, you know, spirituality. And she says, I think I can smell that spirit. She was like two. She says, I think I can smell that spirituality, and it stinks. A two-year-old. I think I can smell that spirituality, and it stinks. You know? And unfortunately, and I know you guys know this, that's what most of the spirituality is. You know, you look at the spiritual community, meaning the people who are attracted to the same types of teachings that we're attracted to, Adyashanti, Eckhart Tolle, Muji, you know, who else? Boom, boom, boom. Gangaji, who else? You know, et cetera, et cetera. And it's like a spiritual persona. I love yoga. I love, you know, dressing a certain way. I love being a vegetarian or a vegan, if that's the thing. I love all of this. But I also still love gossiping and, you know, all of the other stuff as well. I'm still really interested in finding that holy relationship partner. I still want a partner. Only now I call it a holy relationship. It's just everyone fooling themselves. And so it's important to look at that in a non-judgmental way. It's important to look right at it and then ask, what do I want? Do I want to play that spiritual game? Do I want to be the one that talks spirituality, listens to spiritual music, you know, goes to spiritual places, retreats and stuff, and yet it's only skin deep and I'm just fooling myself? Or do we really, really, really want to close the door, go within, and spend time with the heart, and let it be our teacher? Is this an outward-focused spiritual game? Or is this an inward-focused calling, longing, passion? Is this something that I'm willing to do, even if no one else does it? If it means having no friends, not getting invited to the parties anymore? You know, this is really the question that we need to look at. Is this really something that I want now? I think when the inhale is strong enough, I don't know that we could say no if we wanted to. But it still, I think, is helpful to ask ourselves these questions. Am I being honest about my spiritual life, or am I playing a spiritual game? And do I want to be honest about my spiritual life, or would I prefer just to play a spiritual game? Quote number 800, if you are truly earnest and honest, the attainment of reality will be yours. Journal entry 800A, earnestness is not the only focus for the practitioner. Honesty is also important. In fact, one who is always thinking of spirituality, but not being honest with oneself, is not truly earnest. That one is deluded and playing with an unreal spiritual self-image. And again, I just want to emphasize that the spiritual persona is much, much, much more common than the earnest devotee. I don't know how many, you know, like I wish I knew numbers. You know, Michael Langford's always quoting numbers. I wish I could tell you a number like, you know, 85%, 90%, 95%, you know, are really just into the spiritual persona, and only 15 or 10 or 5% are sincere devotees. But I don't know the numbers. I don't know if it's 15% sincere devotees or 1% sincere devotee. What I do know is that we all have the capability to be that sincere devotee. I remember when I was writing NTI Mark. And of course, NTI Mark is just a story, but it's a story with symbols that were meant to be helpful, at least to me. And one of those stories in NTI Mark, it's in the Garden of Gethsemane when Jesus gets arrested. And NTI says that when Jesus got arrested, the apostles were afraid and they scattered in all directions, right? Running, afraid. Except for one, who stayed in the garden in their own contemplation, their own prayer. See, we can all be that one. That's the point of the story. We can all be the sincere devotee. We just have to want it enough and then be earnest and honest. And again, earnest actually includes honest, so that's a little bit of a repetitiveness there for emphasis. What is required in order to be honest with oneself? First, one must have a desire to be honest. And the desire to be honest must be greater than the desire to project a spiritual image. The other day I did something. I'm not quite sure why I did it, but it doesn't really matter. At the end of a teaching, during that teaching I had, you know, misunderstood Ramana Maharshi. And I didn't know I misunderstood Ramana Maharshi until I read a little bit further. And then I went, oh, never mind. Everything I just said isn't what he was saying. Here's what he is saying. And I went back and I corrected myself, which is fine, you know. But then at the end of the teaching, I found myself for about 5 minutes or so talking about how important it is that when we're teaching in the sanctuary, that we select books that stretch us. And I said, you know, right now I'm teaching I Am That, and I'm teaching the spiritual teaching of Ramana Maharshi, both of which are really stretch books for me. And sometimes people may want to take a book where we think that we already know it all, and therefore I can teach it sounding like I know it, right? Like we want to sound like we know what we're teaching, maybe because of that word teaching. And what I said is that's not what's important. What's important isn't that we know it all. I mean, that isn't important at all. What's important is that we're constantly stretching, constantly awakening, right? So instead of picking a book where you already know it all so that you can teach it, grab something that you feel called to that maybe you don't know it all. And maybe you're going to make a mistake like I made today and have to go back and correct that mistake. But, you know, stretch, stretch, stretch. But I find, you know, just over the years as I've talked to different people, it's really difficult for people to be that vulnerable. And the reason it's difficult for people to be that vulnerable is because they want to project that spiritual image. They don't want to come in here and teach something and then say, oh my goodness, I was wrong. Or, oh my goodness, I really don't know what this is talking about. Let's read it more slowly and see if I can get some clarity. They don't want to do that live. Because of the spiritual persona. They want to appear that they know what they're talking about. It's also why people sometimes don't want to admit the challenges they're going through, admit the mistakes they're making, admit that they feel jealousy or anger, or that they don't like someone. They think they don't like someone. It's actually not true. It's just the ego. But they want to project this spiritual persona. Now, I did try projecting a spiritual persona for a time, just like everyone else. If you know me personally now, I don't project a spiritual persona at all. but there was a time when I tried for a little while. I don't know why I did, now that I look back on it, but it just seemed like I had to look spiritual. And what I did was I gave myself terrible headaches. Terrible headaches. When I tried to look spiritual. So I was lucky in that I couldn't tolerate the act. And so I had to be genuine. But even if acting spiritual doesn't make you sick, I recommend noticing whatever tension it does create. It has to create some tension when you're putting on an act. And then just be genuine. You don't have to fool anybody into thinking you're spiritual. That has zero value. I would much rather hang out with a normal person than a spiritual person any day. Spiritual, of course, meaning the persona, the act. Those were the ones that Jasmine couldn't really tolerate because she could smell the act. Like that 2-year-old said, I think I smell the spirituality and it stinks. So what is required in order to be honest with oneself? One must have the desire to be honest. And the desire to be honest must be greater than the desire to project a spiritual image. Time alone with oneself seems important. Time alone with spiritual material that guides one into honesty, honest looking, is extremely helpful. This Seven Steps journal is extremely helpful, and I meant for me, not necessarily for you. So time alone with oneself seems important. Time alone with spiritual material that guides one into honest looking is extremely helpful. This Seven Steps journal is extremely helpful. A true understanding that awakening is the undoing of the personal self is also helpful, because then one can look at any desire to project a self-image and realize that it is the opposite of one's purpose. Now, I'm out of time, so I need to quit there. So I'll come back and look at 800B next week, because I'd like to talk more about that last paragraph. But for now, I need to release the mic, and so that's what I'm going to do. Bye.